Hey Mark, how's it going? How are you doing
Good. How you
today?
doing? Good, Martin. How you doing?
Brilliant, brilliant. Thanks for joining me on the podcast today. Really excited to get into some of your expertise, some of your background. I've tried to do some kind of reading from your bio, what's out there on the internet about you. It came across that building an engaged team is maybe like your number one priority in terms of building a successful business. Do you agree with that? And if so, why do you think that's so important, such an important thing to do?
I think a couple of things, Martin. I started my career as an hourly employee in a manufacturing facility, so the way I look at leadership is different. Having good, I've seen good leaders and I've seen some not so good leaders in my day, and that kind of formed my thought process around true performance in an organization, whether it's manufacturing or other. In my opinion, is really contingent on having an engaged workforce that understands the goals of the organization, that is pushing along with leadership in order to achieve those. So yeah, I do believe engagement is a critical piece of performance and world-class organizations.
Okay, brilliant. So you mentioned that you've kind of learned how to do that from the ground up. In terms of how you've gone, you're at Spartanburg, CEO of Spartanburg Steel Products now. You've developed this engaged team and great culture. In terms of on the road to developing that, what kind of challenges have you come across, and what would you say you've learned about overcoming some of those challenges?
Yeah, I think what is always difficult is when you come into an organization like Spartanburg. 2 years ago I came here, and it's a 40-year company, so there's a lot of history. There's a lot of we've always done things this way. Why do we need to change? So a lot of resistance around the need to change. Obviously, I saw the need to change as I came into the organization, and I saw that we weren't performing well to our customers, to our employees, and also to financially. I had all the reason in the world why we needed to change. But if you've been here 25 years or 30 years in some cases with some of our employees, they really didn't understand the reason of why do we have to do it differently, or why do we have to change this? We've always done it this way. So that resistance definitely is not difficult, but it's a continuous educating, discussing, sharing. Getting the people to understand their reason. So it's a lot of selling to some degree, I suppose you could say, to the operation of why we need to do this and how and what's the benefit to them. And always to me, it's always job security. I mean, you have to be competitive, you have to be financially performing in order to be sustainable long term, and that's really what the message is to the workforce here, and that's the reason why. But it is that's probably one of the resistance points that we push against on a regular basis.
Okay, so you think the key to getting kind of buy-in across the organization is kind of tying in the big goals of the business to something that makes more sense at the level of the specific person, which might be job security in that might be a good example. Yeah. Okay,
Yeah, that's well said. It's having wildly important goals in the organization, which we do. We have three WIGs, we call them, or wildly important goals. But it's really getting that down to the level of every employee, and so that they understand what's their contribution to that goal. Why is it important? And what can they do to contribute to the goal? So yeah, absolutely, that's a key for sure.
Okay, great. That sounds really good. Just like to, for a second, just take a little bit of a step back. You mentioned that you started as an hourly employee in a manufacturing plant. Just tell us a little bit about that. How did you get your start in manufacturing? And what do you, I get, I guess you like manufacturing.
Oh, well, I do. I love it now. Maybe not at the time. I
Okay.
went.
So what,
I
yeah.
went.
So what changed your mind? What made
Sure.
you like it, love it?
I went to college and I took business administration, and I realized that I couldn't really understand what that was going to lead to, and I probably didn't know what I wanted to do with my life at that time. And honestly, how I ended up in manufacturing was my mother. found an advertisement for a new company that was opening up in the city that was close by to where I was living. And they were advertising, you know, new company Freightliner trucks is what it was. They were building a new facility, hiring from the ground up. And, you know, my mother shared that with me and said, you should apply there. And I said, well, I don't know anything about it, but sure. And that's how I started. I got hired and I started on the floor as an employee, loading steering gears and frame rails and different things like that for these heavy Class A trucks. And I fell in love with manufacturing from that point forward and just continued my career from that point forward. And I ended up working for General Motors for a period of time. And I ended up with most of my career spent with Magna International, which is a tier one automotive supplier to the automotive industry. And that's just how I got into it.
So what makes you passionate about it then? What is it that you love about manufacturing?
It's a challenge. Every day is a new challenge, as I'm sure you can appreciate. It's fast moving. It's a lot of high energy, a lot of changing continuously. Fun. I mean, I think it's fun, but it burns a lot of people out, to be honest with you, especially in the automotive space. It's a fast moving, highly competitive space to be in. And I guess I just love it. I love running around with my hair on fire most of the time. And if you don't like to work that way, it's probably not great for you to be in that space, but I do. And that's probably what it is. It's just ever changing. It's constant challenge. It's not boring. It's not you coming to work and having a monotonous or routine kind of thing. Every day presents a new challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess I think it seems to come across that the people that are the most successful are the ones that can balance the ability to firefight and get things resolved while also focusing on the longer term strategy as well. And, you know, work towards things that will drive the kind of the industry forward.
Absolutely. You're absolutely, you really got to be a chameleon. You got to be able to move between, as you describe, right. You know, the strategic, you know, I call it tactical, you know, and the tactical day-to-day stuff where you've got the whirlwind, it's constantly happening. And then you have to be strategic and have vision and plans to achieve the greater good. And so it is, that's what I love about it is you're really running between the full gauntlet of responsibilities.
Okay. So that brings us nicely onto a couple of questions. One about, so you're going through a process at the moment of setting what you guys have called SSP 2.0, which is like an updated set of values and visions. Kind of two questions within that. One of the values I noticed was that a core belief is that structure drives behavior, which drives results. Could you just kind of dig into that a little bit more about what that means and what you feel that does?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Well, just to give a little bit of color around SSP 2.0, 2 years ago when I joined the organization, and again, it's a family-run business, 40 years plus, you know, this has been a very successful company for many years. They went through some hardships in the last few years. It's one of the reasons I came. But I wanted to honor the past. I didn't want in any way for the team here, the employees here, nor ownership to feel like I came in and we're going to change everything and we're going to do everything different. I wanted to honor 1.0, I call it. So SSP 1.0 is the past and SSP 2.0 is the future. And really for our internal purposes and for our employees, we talk about 2.0 just being the future state. Doesn't mean 1.0 was bad. It just means that we have to change. The world's changing. And we have to change along with that. So that's 2.0. And there's a lot of components to 2.0. We've got a vision statement to be a world-class company, WIGs that we follow, and then a strategic plan and how we're doing that. But one of the pieces of that is accountability and structure. And as I came into the organization, I recognized that one of the gaps was that the structure was very flat. It was what I refer to as a mile wide, inch deep. So I didn't really follow who reports to who or what the structure was. And I knew if that was the case that our employees didn't understand, you know, what the goals of the organization are, who I'm reporting to, et cetera. So that whole structure piece, you know, getting structure, creating the structure, creating accountability and creating cadence. Cadence is rhythm. Cadence, minute by minute, hour by hour, shift by shift, day by day, month by month, quarter by quarter, kind of cadence We look at, that's how we run our operation minute by minute. And that, so it's really the three components. It's having the structure, the correct structure. We use business units here with clear reporting lines. Mm-hmm. It's having accountability, and it's having that cadence, you know, the rhythm of the organization and how we go about that. So those are all really important things in terms of how we run the business. And so my belief is exactly as you say, right, is structure drives behavior and ultimately it drives results.
Okay, good, got you. Okay, great. Yeah, that makes sense. So with the vision, you've kind of outlined a clear vision of part of SSP 2.0. How do you feel that helps in terms of setting the direction that the whole company is moving in? You know, how does that trickle down throughout the business, and how does that help you achieve those, you know, monthly, quarterly, annual goals?
Right. You know, the 2.0 gave us a clear line in the sand, you know, where we could kind of separate ourselves from the past, and we could then start to move towards a future state and a future vision. And that became the 2.0. When you talk to the team here, any level of individual in this business, and they will reference 2.0 all the time, you know, even things like, well, that's not 2.0, that's 1.0. So they'll recognize that was the past. We don't do it that way anymore. Yep. That's not the future. So there's a lot of that kind of thing around, which is fun. And it gives them a what. Really, that's what it was all about, Martin, is we had to have a what. You know, a moment of change is required. And what is that? And that became the SSC 2.0. And again, as we talk about it, there's I have visual tools, and we've got a roadmap of 2.0, what it looks like, and the components of that. We talk a lot about it. We talk a lot about the goals of the organization with the employees, and making sure that everybody understands that. But really, that 2.0 is the vehicle of how we will achieve world-class results. And we know we're not world-class today. We don't claim to be. We know we're not. We know we've got a long journey ahead of us to be a world-class organization. But you have to have a vision, and you have to have a desire to want to be. And that's really what that vision statement was about. We want to be a world-class company. We want to do things in a world-class way. And when I reference world-class, what I mean is, whether we're hiring an individual, we want to do it in a world-class way. We want to onboard them in a world-class way. When we have customer performance, we want to have world-class results with customers. We want to be world-class results to our owners. So it's really creating that vision and the what. I use what I refer to as SSP 2.0 is the vehicle in which we will achieve the results and move things forward. And I can tell you it's working because, you know, in 2021, we had our best year in the last, say, 4 years. Mm-hmm. You know, our customer issues went down by 80%. We were profitable for the first time in 4 years. So a lot of things changed. And I really give the credit to the team here and the fact that we had a strategic vision and a strategic plan, which is SSP 2.0, to achieve that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. And like 2021 for a lot of people was a difficult year. So that's good. That's good that you did that. So do you think the way that you kind of like package the new vision and the language that you've used, the easy to use language, the 2.0, do you think, because lots of companies come up with an updated list of value statements, don't they? But it's not always that clear. But you think the way of saying that's 1.0, that's 2.0, you think that simplification makes it easier to follow?
Yeah, I think it allows us to agree as an organization and with leadership and employees that, you know, what was in the past is in the past, and what 2.0 of the future is. And I think we've got, it's maybe a little bit more than that. We've certainly got a lot of examples of 2.0 here. What I mean by that is, you know, the environment. So this is a factory with large stamping presses, tandem lines, welding. We do a lot of different types of processes. And in that, the environment out in the plant is clean, safe, organized, bright lights. I mean, we put a tremendous amount of effort into creating an environment that would also be conducive to performance. That was part of it. But what my point is that the employees know that that is 2.0. They see that as 2.0. We talk a lot and share a lot of information around, you know, what we would refer to as the 2.0 pieces of what we do. Mm-hmm. For example, We do coffee chats with employees. We do surveys. We do ask the president box. We have one-on-ones. All of those are pieces of 2.0. So I do believe that our employees understand that and reference it. And we also have employee meetings on a monthly basis where we discuss these things. We talk about our safety, quality, delivery, cost, and motivation performance and what that looks like. And we continually educate our teams on the 2.0 components of the strategy.
Okay, got you. Okay, that sounds amazing. This next question, it may go somewhere, it may not. You've developed kind of an interesting strategy for this. Do you have mentors kind of played a role in helping you to get where you are kind of today and to learn how to do this?
Yeah, absolutely. Interestingly enough, and I go back to referencing my start in my career was as an hourly employee. You know, that having those glasses and looking through those glasses as a shop floor employee, looking at management's behavior, having supervisors, I got to witness and see a lot of bad leaders, right? I saw some great leaders, but I witnessed some awful leaders as well. And I would tell you, Martin, that both were equally important in my development.
Yeah,
because I got to see firsthand what doesn't work. You know, what I shouldn't do if I'm ever to be a leader. And I didn't have it in my mind at the time that I planned to be a president or CEO, but I certainly witnessed some really poor behavior from leaders. And I saw some great mentors that I learned a tremendous amount, but they're equally important to me because I got two different reference points of what works and what doesn't. I do truly think that that's one of the reasons I consider myself to be a different type of leader. And I really go back to that. You know, I didn't come out of, you know, university college and go directly into a management role. I kind of went the other way and learned through the harder way of being a shop floor hourly employee and earning my time on the floor. But yes, I had some wonderful leaders that taught me some tremendous things that had super high expectations and I was devastated to ever let them down. And I had some horrible screaming, yelling, throwing, jumping up and down type bosses who I had zero respect for and could care less. But
So looking back at the person you were when you started in manufacturing when you were 20 to who you've become now to be CEO of a manufacturing company, how would you say you've had to change personally to get to the point where you can lead that company?
That's a great question. I just think it's the experience, all the experiences that I've had growing, three different countries, different people are people. That's what I've definitely learned, right? No matter what country you work or live in, people are people. Mm-hmm. They have the same expectations. So I just think the experience of having that opportunity to be in three countries, different companies, and learning, you know, from what I would refer to as a humble start as a shop floor employee and over time having the opportunity to be in many different roles in quality, in continuous improvement, as an assistant plant manager. So all the different things, all the experience has certainly molded who I am today in how my belief windows and how I treat others and things like that is really that I certainly couldn't have predicted back when I was a young person just starting that I never had aspirations to be in the role I'm in today. It just worked out that way. I worked hard and learned, made a lot of mistakes and learned from those mistakes, what has to happen or would do differently to be successful. So.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks very much for everything that you shared with me today. And that was really fascinating to dig into that. What's the best way for people to find out more about yourself and get in touch with you if they want to say hello?
Sure. Yeah. LinkedIn is the best way. So I have a LinkedIn profile. Just Google or go to LinkedIn in my name and I'm there. Mm-hmm. Happy to share information. I reply on a regular basis to most people that send me notes and messages. So I'd be happy to do that. And I appreciate the time, Martin.
Brilliant. I hope you have a great day, Mark. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks, Martin. Take care.